Welcome to this interview. I'm your host, Megan Gibson. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Sharon Stills, a leading naturopathic medical doctor renowned for her holistic and natural approach to health and wellness. Her work emphasizes the power of natural healing and the importance of understanding and addressing the underlying causes of health issues. Dr. Sharon Stills, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to start with this phenomenon that, you know, when people have anxiety and it's causing problems kind of systemically for them, they don't typically come to the doctor and say, I have anxiety, help me. They come to the doctor and say other things. So what are people describing that they're coming to you to seek help with?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think they describe it in a variety of ways, from inability to sleep, inability to be present, feeling heart palpitations, heart racing, constant thoughts, worry. So they might not say anxiety, but let's say, I really worry about a lot of things. I can't stay focused. I have high blood pressure. I am overweight. I have headaches. I have gastrointestinal disturbances. I mean, it really runs the full spectrum of what you could be coming in to see a physician like myself for.
Yeah. And I was like, check, check. I mean, I can think of moments in my life when anxiety was causing all of those things. Thankfully, not all at once usually, but you know, it depends what sort of anxiety you're suffering from, what the instigating force was sometimes, and also the other stressors in your life as to what kind of stress you're going to be experiencing and the resulting anxiety. So where do you even begin in your practice in helping somebody assess that and then start treating it?
Well, a lot of it, when I do an intake with someone, I'm really sensing just their personality, what they're ruminating on or obsessing over, because we can be anxious. Sometimes it's normal to be anxious. So we in our society—
Appropriate even sometimes, given, yeah, life and all of its circumstances, yeah.
Yeah, we often, in our society, we like to glamorize joy and feeling good and feeling accomplished. And we like to shove under the blanket, feeling envious or feeling angry or feeling depressed. And in my world, I say all emotions, lives are equal and all emotions deserve attention. We have this wide variety of emotions for a reason. And it's when we can be present with our emotions, when we can experience our emotions, when we can get curious about our emotions, question our emotions, we can understand them, and then they will move through us more easily. And even from a traditional Chinese medicine perspective, you could have an excess of joy that is too stressful for the body and can cause imbalances. So it's really about finding balance, finding a way to be present with your emotions. And now I forgot the initial question you asked me.
No, you were doing great. And I was just relating to what you were saying. I mean, it's been 20 years, but I can remember falling in love and feeling extraordinary anxiety and stress and, you know, sick to my stomach and all those things that we put a spot positive spin on, and they were all very joyful and wonderful and awesome, but yet also like caused a lot of physiological responses, right?
Yeah, now I remember. So we can be anxious appropriately. If one of your loved ones is really sick, it's normal to be anxious about their well-being. And so I often look for, are you reacting appropriately, or are you suppressing your emotions and you have apathy or you're detached, because that's not healthy either. But when a patient, so you can become anxious about your health. And I see that a lot, especially in my line of work where I'm a naturopathic medical doctor. So I'm getting patients who are very interested, educated. You're watching this summit right now, right? Like you're taking time to be here. But sometimes it can be a tipping point where you are overly anxious and I have to prescribe. You are not allowed to go on Google, Dr. Google. You are not allowed to look things up, and just have to learn how to trust and have someone guide you. And so we can become anxious about the foods we are eating. We can become anxious about too many toxins or too many EMFs, or anxious about, are we getting enough exercise? Are we meditating enough? Are we meditating the correct way? So it's really when something becomes overwhelming and starts to overtake our life and prohibits us from having a well-balanced, regulated nervous system where we're flowing through life and we're making choices from a mindful place and we're feeling balance and we're feeling joy and regulation.
Yeah, and do you find also that in your practice that there's so many roles that we occupy in our lives, and a lot of those roles depend on high functioning anxiety and a certain measure of anxiety. I think about like parenting or managing a crew full of people, and there's certainly gender roles or even professional roles that require a little bit of worry or concern or planning. And if we combine too many of those roles, then our nervous system starts to get overwhelmed if we're not noticing that we never kind of return, because as we shift roles throughout our day, we're just staying at that like baseline, super anxious. Or am I just talking about myself?
Well, I think it really depends because, like, I think of myself. I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, I'm a doctor, I manage a lot of patients, I manage a big clinic. I have a lot of roles, but I don't consider myself an anxious person. I have patients who are very ill who might be more at the top of my head, but I'm not obsessing, I'm responding appropriately to them. And so I think when you can look at yourself and like, so let's just go biochemically and physiologically, because some of this is personality trait and learned and can be from a traumatic childhood, let's say. So you are used to, your nervous system goes, ah, yes, this is home, being anxious, right? This is what I recognize. But let's set that aside for a moment and let's just talk about some physiological things. So first, let's talk about women and their hormones. So progesterone deficiency is rampant. And part of this is because we have a lot of stress. And so there's a difference between stress and anxiety and how we respond to it. And if we have too much stress and our biochemical pathway is pulling progesterone to cortisol, we're going to automatically have our progesterone levels be deficient. And I call progesterone like nature's Xanax, right? It is the hormonal Xanax. It is the hormonal Valium. It is the hormone that when I prescribe to patients, their husbands send me flowers or pop into the appointment. Or I was on a Zoom call with a patient the other day, and the patient's husband is in the background, like, thank you, Dr. Stills. Thank you, Dr. Stills. You know, so if you're feeling anxiety and you're perimenopausal or menopausal, you have to look at your hormones because it is a huge issue. When the hormones start to decrease, anxiety starts to increase. Even if you've never been, I had a patient just yesterday. She's like, I have never been anxious my whole life, and now I'm anxious. And I ran her 24-hour urine test for her hormones. And her estrogen was low, and her progesterone was low, and her DHEA was low, and her testosterone was low. And all of these hormones impact our emotions and our cortisol levels and our insulin levels and our brain and our neurotransmitters. And so, for instance, progesterone is connected to GABA, and estrogen is connected to serotonin, and testosterone is connected to dopamine. And so when these levels are low, it's throwing off our neurotransmitters and it's throwing off our moods. So I have a large, significant number of patients who their anxiety is truly just induced by an imbalance in hormones, or it's created because their cortisol levels are out of balance. And so we always have to look at cortisol and insulin and how your blood sugar is, because blood sugar roller coaster can create anxiety as well. And so then we take that back a step and we look at what are you eating and are you getting enough protein and are you overdoing it on caffeine? Are you overdoing it on sugar? Are you overdoing it on alcohol? And then we can take that a step back and look at your gut health and your microbiome. And just because you're eating healthy, so this is a big one I say, you're eating healthy and you're like, no, I'm rocking it. I'm getting my 30 grams of protein with every meal. I'm hitting my levels. And then I do some blood work and I'm like, you are super protein deficient. So yes, you're eating the right thing, but is your hydrochloric acid on board? And that's your stomach acid. So it can be referred to as HCl, hydrochloric acid, stomach acid. And often, I want to say almost always, I never say always because we're all biochemically unique and there's never an always, but often or most always, Patients, and this is men, women, this is even teenagers these days, have very suppressed hydrochloric acid levels. And so you're doing the right thing, but you're not absorbing it, so your body's not even benefiting from it.
So much to consider. And it's wonderful to have somebody like you on your team because it is overwhelming. You know, I can see people coming in and being like, you know, I have all of these very related kind of symptoms, you know, like my digestion, I'm doing all of the right things. I'm intelligent and responsible with my diet, my exercise, I'm journaling. Like I remember when I was diagnosed with anxiety, I was like, listen, man, my doctor was man. It's like, I'm eating right. I exercise 5 times a day. I have a gratitude journal. I meditate. I do yoga. Like I was like, I'm doing all of the things. What's going on? Right. And it can be so frustrating and conventional kind of general practice, go in and get your well check and then be like, but all my bones also ache. And, you know, it's hard for me to exercise because of this and that. So, you know, you mentioned the kind of urine testing for hormones and looking at diet, looking at stress, looking at lifestyle, looking at kind of how somebody is wired and their family system that they came from. And what are some other ways that you tackle that? I mean, is this like, it feels much more like a mentorship than a medicine relationship to me. Is that fair?
I mean, I think of myself as a co-creator in my patient's health experience because it is, there's so many different reasons. So it frustrates the heck out of me. I just had a patient the other day. She's like, I went to my primary care or my OBGYN. You know, I hear the same story over and over. And I told them I was feeling this anxiety. They said, it's not your hormones, you know. Meanwhile, she's like a 51-year-old woman. It's all in your head, but we can give you an anti-anxiety or we can give you birth control pills. And like, so medicine, I always say, like, we excel in trauma. You know, God forbid I get hit by a car. Do not take me to me. Take me to the emergency room where they're going to take good care of me. But other than that, it's like our healthcare is really disease care. And traditional MDs, unless they step outside the box and start educating themselves, they're really just trained to find the pill that you need. And even in my line of work, I have this hashtag, not all medicine comes in a pill bottle. And it's like, I want that to blow up because I want people to understand that even coming to see me, your answer may not lie in taking the right vitamin. It's going to be a piece of the puzzle, a piece of the pie, but maybe you're nature deficient. Maybe you are not finding your joy or taking time to rest. Maybe you are totally overscheduled and you have no white space in your calendar. Maybe you're not prioritizing your sleep. Maybe you don't know how to set boundaries. Maybe you are vitamin deficient. Maybe it is a protein issue. Maybe it is a B vitamin issue. Maybe it is a SNP and you don't metabolize and you don't have enough serotonin in your brain. Like, to me, there's so many options. Like, I always have hope for people because a lot of times we lose our hope. We think, well, we tried this and it didn't work. And to me, I'm like, there's 7,000 reasons you could be anxious. You could have mycotoxins. You can have heavy metal toxicity. You can have just environmental toxicity. And at this point, we all have a degree of toxicity. It's just how much and how is it affecting you? So I'm a really big believer and practitioner of the mind and the body. We really have to marry the two. We talk about it a lot, but we don't always do that. Like, I even had a patient the other day say, you know, I need to look more at the emotional stuff. You know, I'm really good at eating and I'm really good at taking whatever supplement you tell me to take, but can we dive into the energetics more? And I'm like, absolutely, we're going there, you know, because we are, we're emotional, energetic, spiritual beings, and we can't disregard. And I would challenge you all listening, you know, just to take a moment and reflect upon yourself. Like, what are the things you like want to shy away from? And those are the things you probably should run towards when you're on your healing journey.
Absolutely, good point. And I want to come back to something you said earlier too about, you know, each of these hormone tests and testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. And one of the things that I found out at our hormone conference we did previously was I had no idea about I mean, I thought I knew what estrogen was and what it did, but you mentioned its relationship to serotonin and also things like gut motility, like actually moving your food through your system, and that most of your serotonin is in your gut, not in your brain. And we think about the pills that we take for mental health, and I think people get this picture because of the way that we market and compartmentalize medicine sometimes, that all the serotonin lives in your brain and that all you need is a pill to like make your brain absorb your serotonin and then your anxiety will go away. But it's so much more involved than that. And each of these, as you were talking about, each of these hormones, your progesterone, your DHA, and your testosterone, your dopamine, it's like, it's not just, none of these chemicals are just about how happy or fulfilled you feel. They're also moving food through your system or creating, liver bile. And now I'm just making things up that I remember people saying, but it's more than just making sure you can feel joy and happiness. It's also like, can you digest your food? Are you producing and secreting the things that your body needs in order to operate like a Ferrari or insert your, luxury car of choice there instead of a jalopy, if you want.
Yeah, I mean, bile flow is a huge thing. I mean, T4 to T3 conversion is happening there, and low thyroid function is a huge one that can also contribute to anxiety. Treating the thyroid without addressing the adrenal glands can overstimulate the thyroid and decrease adrenal function. That can create anxiety. So I always look at it like it's a spider web. All the hormones, all the body parts. I always laugh, like, specialists. You go to a, you're seeing your lung doctor, and you say, "By the way, I have an ear infection." Like, well, I don't know. I only treat the lungs. You have to, and like I treat the whole entire body. Like it's all connected. How could you not treat the whole body? And so we can even, starting with the teeth. So our wisdom teeth are connected to our small intestine and heart meridian. And it's a very common place where patients have cavitations. So their wisdom teeth were pulled improperly. They've developed infections in the jawbone. And this is affecting the heart and the small intestine meridian and can cause a lot of anxiety. I see a lot of connection with bipolar disease diagnosis and issues in the wisdom teeth as well. So we could, every part has a relationship to why we can be feeling the way we're feeling. We can look at our fascial system, and if our fascia is not free and unrestricted, we're not getting the communication from the not only our internal environment, but the external environment to speak to the organs, to speak to the cells, to speak to the mitochondria, to produce what we need to produce. If our lymph isn't flowing, then we're not getting rid of toxins, and that can cause anxiety from a biochemical perspective. We can be auto-intoxicating ourselves. If we are constipated, that can cause anxiety, and we can be constipated because we have low hormones, or a simple thing of being subclinically dehydrated can cause anxiety. And I see that in almost every patient. And if they are, again, it goes back to like I was saying, if you're eating enough protein, but you're not absorbing it, if you're drinking enough water, but you're not using minerals or electrolytes in it, or you're drinking the wrong kind of water, that can lead to anxiety. So pretty much anything we discuss can lead to a feeling of anxiety in the body because the body wants to feel balanced. And when it doesn't, that can set things off.
So there's so much we can do, and somebody like you is going to be a wonderful companion in that journey. I kind of want to pivot a little bit to folks that have more chronic illnesses, more things that are not quite so easily, or maybe they are easily, but lots of chronic illnesses. I know that you have a specialty and you've treated a lot of people with cancer. And so there's anxiety that comes with chronic illness, whether you are the ill person or a caretaker of the ill person. So I would love if you could talk to me about how you treat those types of patients and their families.
Yeah, I mean, when you have been ill for a long time, or you get a devastating diagnosis like something like cancer, it can certainly induce anxiety. And so I think we, the big giant elephant or gorilla in the room, we all have anxiety about getting old, about getting sick, about dying. And when you get handed one of those diagnoses, it can easily intensify that. I think it's subacute in all of us, and we don't talk about it enough. Like, I just had a patient the other day whose mother is dying. She's on hospice. And she said, "I don't think my mother knows she's dying." And I said, and she said, "I haven't talked to her about it." And so we had a nice conversation, and now she's going to go talk to her mother about it, because we shy away from it. And so when someone gets a diagnosis of cancer, one, I am very conscious to not call them a cancer patient. They are a person who has a cancer diagnosis. And I say this a lot, but one of the things that I notice when I'm in a treatment process with them is that when they come to me and say, "Dr. Stills, I'm so glad I got cancer because it has given me the gift of whatever that gift is," I know that we're on our way to healing, and I know that they are really embracing what this journey is about. And it sounds really weird to think, "Oh my God, I'm so glad I got cancer," but I'm telling you, it happens every time. And so I think, first off, we need to be in the moment, and we need to appreciate where we are. If you are listening and you don't have a chronic illness, really appreciating your health and what you have. And every day I get up and I give thanks that I was gifted another day, because aging is not guaranteed. It's a privilege. It's an opportunity that we get to participate in. And we have to acknowledge that. I give thanks for, because I know I've had chronic illness in my past. I know what it's like to not be able to get off the couch and be in bed for 3 months. And so giving thanks that, my feet are working, my arms are working, I can stand up and take a shower. I mean, there were days when taking a shower was all I could do. That was the event of the day. And so I think we have to, we are in such a reactionary mode when it comes to health in our society, especially here in the States, that we have to start getting more into a preventive mode. And we have to start thinking about, if I want to age gracefully, if at age 85, I still want to be hiking the trails, what am I doing now that's going to ensure that? Instead of that typical societal view that, "Well, of course I ache, I'm getting older." Like, that's total BS. If we take care of ourselves, if we keep our hormones balanced, if we eat the right things, all these things that we've already talked about, I'm not going to list them all again, but if we do the right things, then our bodies are designed to be biologically 120 years old. And I've actually upped my ante. I'm going to 130, because I do water fasting mimicking diets, and that reverses the biological age, and it induces autophagy, which is cellular cleansing of the dead cells. So I think I can make it to 130. And so I challenge you to meet me there. But I think if we start to, like, I used to say I was an anti-aging physician, and I've changed that, because I thought, why would I be against aging? Like, I'm not against aging. First of all, it's inevitable. So if I'm going to be against it, I'm just fighting a losing battle, because, from the time I started this interview with you to 45 minutes to the time we finish, we have all aged. Everyone watching is aged a little bit. So we can control, though, how we're marching toward that final, where we make our transition and we die. We can slow that down. We can make it a much more quality-filled journey by the choices we make of what, how we move our bodies, what we think, what we put in our mouths, et cetera, et cetera. So when someone gets a chronic illness, we have to talk about that. We unpack the elephant sitting in the corner, and we talk about, not just with them, but their family, because it triggers everyone's fear and everyone's issue. And I'm not saying that's bad. We all have it, but we have to open it up. We have to communicate with it so we can start to see what it's coming from. And then, I believe, and I just became a certified death doula, And for those of you that don't know what a death doula is, because I didn't know what a death doula is either until I read Jodi Picoult's book a few years back, and her main character was a death doula. So you've probably heard of a birth doula, which is someone who helps a new mother take care of her baby and maybe does some of the feedings or changes the diapers. The new mother's tired, but a death doula helps someone to die with dignity, with grace, with joy, helps handle the emotions in the family, helps to make death a conversation so that someone in our family isn't dying and we're afraid to even let them know they're dying because they probably know anyway. And not talking about things creates much more anxiety. So I often say anxiety is a waste of the imagination. Because a lot of times, so I use the example a lot with patients who I'm going to do some injections on, whether it's neural therapy or I'm just doing an IV or blood draw, and they're afraid of needles or, I'm injecting their tonsils and they're like, whoa. And always the fear of what's going to happen is so much worse than the actual happening of it. And so I think we do that a lot. We work ourselves up, we create scenarios. And what if we could start to obsess about a positive thing happening? Because I truly believe, and it's easy to say and it's harder to do, but I truly believe that our lives are a reflection of our internal belief systems. And this is the law, this is the way the universe works. But we are ingrained in, whether how we were brought up or what our teachers or our religions or our society or media has taught us, we tend to be more on the worry negative side than the happy puppies and roses side. But if we can really work to focus on how we think and to catch ourselves when we're thinking negatively, the universe doesn't really know if something is just being thought or it's actually happened or is going to happen. So we have some power. We can use one of my favorite techniques that's easy, you could do at home, it's free, is EFT tapping, which can really rewire the way the brain is thinking and focusing and work to attract more positive things to ourselves. And going back to the chronic illness, we have to look at if we've been sick a really long time, sometimes we're afraid to know what it's like to be well. We're so identified with being sick. We're identified with, maybe like as a child, you were sick and that was the only way you got positive attention. Otherwise, you were ignored in your family. So we have to, doesn't mean you're bad or you're wrong. It just means this is the journey, but these things need to be looked at because they can be a very prominent feature in why you're so sick or why you're not getting well. I always give the body a chance. So we go in, we modulate the hormones, we modulate the diet, we modulate the eliminatory organs. We make sure everything is open and flowing. We balance the gut microbiome. We get the food sensitivities out. We seal up the leaky gut. We get rid of the toxins. We look at your neurotransmitters, make sure there's no underlying viral infections, the whole thing. But if we've like done all that and either we're not really finding significant results, or we've done all that and you're on the right protocols and not getting better. Like, we have to bring in what's going on in your belief, what's going on in your energy that is stopping you from being fully expressed as a healthy being.
Absolutely. That last key, or I mean, I guess you could address it first, but but either direction, you're gonna have to bring that mindset piece into a journey toward wellness and high functioning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting because if you ask me like what comes first, the chicken or the egg, I would say that illness sets in from an energetic perspective. Like, it's kind of like if we're not living in alignment, like when I was on the couch for 3 months, and this was like 30 years ago, I did all the right things, but it wasn't until I figured out that I was really not happy about not seeing my children. I was a single mother, I had 2 young kids at the time, and I changed everything. It's like, so it didn't matter what green juice or organic broccoli I was eating. When I figured out that I was going to start homeschooling them and change the way my massage practice. And like all the, it's like I went from being, lying horizontal to vertical. It was what got me off the couch. So I've experienced this myself. I've seen it with a lot of patients, whether it's leaving the job or leaving the bad marriage or writing the book or going on that journey, whatever it is for you, because it's all different for all of us. So I've seen it, and I do believe that illness comes in and kind of like screams louder and louder till we're having symptoms because we're living out of alignment with our soul's journey. However, for the most part, as a physician, because even though that's really easy to say, it can be really difficult for people to do. And I want to give people the best chance possible to heal. And I do. I mean, I see really, wonderful things happen with my patients. But I feel like if you're going to do that emotional work, it's really good to make sure like you're not deficient in B vitamins or it's like your zinc copper ratio that's throwing you off. So I do work, I'm talking about the emotions, we're doing some things, but I do work a lot on the physical body because a balanced physical vessel will help you to do that deeper work. It's hard to like do that work if you have a migraine and you're not sleeping. And often balancing these physical pieces, like progesterone is like for a menopausal woman, like progesterone, I would say 90% of the time in my practice, just the right progesterone, the right dose and the right form balanced with the other hormones, it's like they go from not sleeping to sleeping. So it's a lot easier than to start looking at the trauma of your childhood when you've had a good night's sleep rather than when you're exhausted because you haven't had a good night's sleep. So it's kind of opposite of what I believe and think and how I actually do things, but that's because I'm a clinician and I want to help people and I want to set them up for success.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, it's much, much easier to address mindset and the way that you think and being open-minded when you're not under inflammation, you're not in chronic pain, you're not, nutrient deficient and have an illness. Like I've had, a couple of surgeries and a couple of illnesses through the years, and that's always what struck me is how quickly my mindset takes a nosedive. And I have, confidence. I'm like, okay, this is something I will recover from, but it gives me incredible compassion and empathy for people with chronic illness. Of like, I will never ever talk to somebody with chronic illness about their mindset without them asking for support, because it's just like, ooh, it's pain can be transformative and it's hard.
And I think I have to give a shout out to MBSR, which is mindfulness-based stress reduction. This is the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn. You can read his book, Full Catastrophe Living. You can Google MBSR. Ever since the pandemic, there's a lot of 8-week programs online. You can find one in person. We'll be doing some in-person ones here at my new clinic in Scottsdale. But this is an 8-week transformative program that teaches you how to be present because becoming present and learning how to breathe and learning how to experience what you're going through is truly the best medicine from an emotional perspective that you can give yourself to handle your anxiety. And we often tease that it's sort of stressful to go through the stress reduction program because you get homework of scanning your body and breathing and doing things. But the people who commit to it and commit it and complete the course, anxiety is either gone or significantly reduced. And this has nothing to do with taking a pill, even a B vitamin pill. This has to do with empowering you that you have the power. And we used to teach this in hospitals to patients with cancer who were dealing, when you have metastases to the bone, when you're dealing with cancer, that's some of the most intense pain you will experience. And just by giving them the opportunity to breathe and explore and become present with the pain, their pain levels without pharmaceuticals were able to significantly decrease. So when we have pain, we typically, right, we We get into that fight or flight and we crunch up and we constrict. But if we breathe into the pain and we explore the pain and we see, does the pain have a temperature? Does the pain have a shape? Does the pain have a color? Does the pain have a message it wants to give us? It changes our relationship to the pain, and we don't crunch, we actually open, and it can help the pain reduce and help the pain flow through us. So I highly recommend check out MBSR if you are dealing with anxiety, because mindfulness truly is the best medicine. And it's all about, a lot of people think meditation is about doing a guided meditation and going to the Bahamas and lying on a hammock, and that's fine and dandy, but that's taking you out of your life and out of your experience. And mindfulness is about waking up to your experience, waking up to what you're experiencing. And not only can it help with anxiety and pain, it can lower blood pressure, it can help gastrointestinal issues, because all of these things are so intimately related to anxiety. And so you can heal a lot of what ails you just by learning how to breathe and how to be present.
Well, Dr. Sharon, how can people find out more about you, your practice, and the MBSR course that you've got coming up?
So our new clinic in Scottsdale is slated to open January 2025, hoping to have a big New Year's grand opening. So you can, it's going to be called Stills Health Center. So you can Google stillshealthcenter.com. You can Google drstills.com. You can look up those names anywhere else you want and learn more about me. And for MBSR, I'll give a shout out to my mentor and teacher, Paul Sugar. He's here in Scottsdale. And hopefully, once the clinic is up and running, we're going to be co-teaching some classes together here in Scottsdale. But it is a program that if you just get involved wherever you are, whether it be online or in person, you don't have to come do it with me. Just go find it, because you will benefit from it.
Fantastic. Dr. Sharon Stills, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.